Yeah, the toughest criticisms to take are in the closer the relationship, like husband and wife, partners, business partners, or somebody you're working really closely with. Those criticisms are sometimes the hardest to take because you're close to each other. You're kind of more open to each other than you are with strangers. You meet a stranger, you're usually pretty nice and you don't say anything negative about them. But somebody you're close to, if they're doing something wrong, you're more open with your conversation. And this also creates a somewhat of a danger. You have to be really careful even with people you're close to. Isn't that right, Artie?
Yes.
Okay, any more comments on that?
Okay. Can I ask a comment?
What's that?
Just something real quick. I just like that that really cool quote by Oscar Wilde. True friends stab you in the front. True friends stab you in the front.
Oh.
But also too, I was going to say that I feel like very close to judging. I think something that may come before judging is a form of gossip. Gossiping.
Yeah.
And then usually when gossip gets brought to me, I say, let's not talk about this person unless we're going to help them in some way. And then as soon as they bring up any form of labels, it kind of makes a construct where they can't be helped. So I try to avoid any form of labels. I just say, let's just talk about what needs improvement, and then who's going to approach them to see if we can help them out.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What's that quote? Small minds talk about people, great minds talk about ideas, and there's a third one I can't remember. Anybody remember who was that?
Yeah.
Okay, the next parable, the garment of the new cloth on the old garment. No one sews a patch of unshrunk cloth on an old garment, for the patch will pull away from the garment, making the tear worse. Neither do people pour new wine into old wineskins. If they do, the skins will burst and the wine will run out of the wineskins and be ruined. No, they pour new wine into new wineskins, and both are preserved. Yeah, when they made wine back in the days of Jesus, they made them in these skins, and the wine expanded. And then if you try to use the skin a second time, the wine would expand and break apart the container. So the wine was ruined. So the basic idea here is if you have new teachings, like Jesus presented some new teachings that people had never heard before. So he couldn't just go to the Pharisees and Sadducees and say, hey guys, I've got some new teachings. I can give them to you and then you can give them to the people. Would that have worked? No. So what did he do? How did he, where did he put his wine? Yeah, they went totally out of the authoritative system and didn't even go to many large towns. He went to a bunch of small towns and preached his gospel, and a lot of people listened and they liked, because these people outside of, most of them outside of Jerusalem and outside of, they didn't have a lot of contact with the inner authorities of that day. These people were not programmed very much. So they listened to him. And so these were like new garments and new wine containers that he could put the new teachings in them, and they would not fall apart. They would not reject them. They could contain them. And so, well, Curtis and I found that out, like I told you the story. I don't think Curtis was arrived yet. I told him how we went to Idaho Falls, and after we were excommunicated, and we figured we were all free to now can go go enlighten the Mormons and bring them up an extra step. And we put all that effort into that symposium at the Holiday Inn, and just one 12-year-old kid showed up to cry, call us to repentance. And so we were trying to put new wine in the old wineskins. And we found that the people that accepted what we had was people that, a lot of people that didn't have any belief system at all. They just wanted to learn something. And these were the type of people that we could put the wine in, and they would appreciate it. And they appreciated learning something new. But once somebody gets in a thought system, they don't want anything contrary to what that belief system is. Do you guys find out that to be true pretty much?
Yeah, well, I think one example is the populist movement. I think that's why it's so successful today, is because people are starting to realize it's not about right and left. It's about top and bottom, up and down. The people are tired of the authoritative system and the both sides panic.
Yeah, people are leaving both the Democrat and Republican parties and kind of being in between. They just want what's best.
And that's scary as hell to the authorities.
Yeah, yeah. And the authorities of both sides are upset about that. Okay, any more comment on that? No parable.
Well, the key is to keep your mind elastic so you can always receive something new.
Yeah. The parable of the divided kingdom. But when the Pharisees heard this, they said, it's only by Beelzebub. The prince of demons said, this fellow, Jesus, drives out demons. Jesus knew their thoughts and said to them, every kingdom divided itself shall be ruined, and every city or household divided against itself shall not stand. If Satan drives out Satan, he is divided against himself. How then shall his kingdom stand? If I drive out demons by Beelzebul, and by whom do your people drive them out? So then, they will be your judges. But if it is by the Spirit of God that I drive out demons, then the kingdom of God has come down unto you. Or again, how can anyone enter a strong man's house and carry off his possessions unless he first ties up the strong man? Then he can plunder his house. Whosoever is not with me is against me, and whosoever does not gather with me scatters. A lot of meat there. Abraham Lincoln quoted this in his debate with Douglas, and he says, a kingdom divided itself against itself shall not stand. A nation cannot be half slave and half free and stand. It has to be either one or the other has to prevail. And thank God, freedom prevailed more than slavery. But there's several things interesting about this. First of all, they saw him healing people, and they accused him of doing it by the power of the devil, who they named Beelzebul.
Are you trying to say Beelzebub?
Yes.
I thought it was, but here it says Beelzebul. I've always thought Beelzebub, but maybe it's this translation.
It might be his
half-brother.
Yeah.
I think we pronounce
it Beelzebub. Yeah, I think it is in the King James. This is a different translation. And they write it Beelzebub. I've never heard that before. We'll call him Beelzebub since that's what we're...
Call him Bubba.
Yeah.
I like that.
But anyway, this was their version of the devil, basically. And so they figured that Jesus was doing these miracles by the power of the devil. And so Jesus pointed out, you know, I am casting out devils. So if I'm casting out devils by the power of the devil, then Satan's kingdom is divided against itself. He says, in order to, Satan is a pretty strong man. In order to invade his kingdom and take from his kingdom, he says, you have to bind the strong man. And then you can plunder his kingdom. And this is what I've done. I have bound the powers of evil so that I can enter into the kingdom and do whatever I want. And just that statement alone probably really irritated the authorities that were trying to trap him. But this is the same with us. We have two natures. We have our soul and our personality, our lower nature and our higher. And oftentimes, the kingdom within ourselves is divided. And the thing that causes division, maybe more than anything else, is the fact that we have to go out in the world and make money in order to survive, pay our bills, take care of our kids, take care of everything. And if we're putting a lot of attention on money, and he says, this is another statement that bothered me throughout my life, is when Jesus says, you cannot serve God and mammon. And I have found that when I have focused on making money, I haven't had a lot of time for the spiritual side. When I'm focused on the spiritual side, I didn't make much money. And so I was divided. And so what I did for a good portion of my life, I focused on the material side and then let everything drop and focused on the spiritual, and then pretty soon all the money would just disappear. And then I'd have to go back and focus on making money again. One time, I put a lot of focus when I was in real estate on, I decided to sell mobile home parks. I thought, boy, you sell a mobile home park, you make a really nice commission. And so I put a whole bunch of focus on just one point in this, and I got three of them sold. And man, that'd give me enough money for a live for a couple of years. And I thought, boy, this is great. As soon as I get paid on these, I'm going to do all kinds of good things and on the spiritual work. But I made a great mistake. I dropped my focus on the material side too soon, and I started writing a book and put all with putting some spiritual principles in and so on. So I put all my focus on this book, and you know, I put a little attention on the real estate side, keeping the T's crossed and stuff. But within about a month and a half, just before the closing of all these, all three sales fell through. I was devastated. I had to quit writing the book. I had to return to real estate, and it was like starting from scratch. It's like I'd never been in real estate before, because taking my attention completely off of it just made everything fall apart, and it took a lot of energy to get back to where I could even make any sales of anything. But if I had kept my attention, see, energy follows thought. And so it's been a big problem in my life. And what was kind of funny with Artie, when I met her, I was putting all my attention on the spiritual side, and it caused a big problem with my marriage with my second wife. And everything started to fall apart. And when I married her, I'd come to the conclusion, I thought, I have to focus on developing an income so I'm not dependent on anybody else. Okay, I have to do that, I concluded. And this disappointed her, because she was attracted to me because of my spiritual teaching. She wanted to do the spiritual work. I said, no, we got to create a business. And I come down to either selecting real estate or advertising. And the
I should have picked real estate. Oh, we'd be millionaires by now if we'd done that. But instead, I picked the wrong thing. But we still made it work. Took a lot of energy, but we survived. And it wasn't until 10 years later I focused on that, didn't do anything spiritual. We just focused on building business. Because this was my weakness. My weakness is the material side. So I learned a lot during those 10 years that we worked together. And then come time to write The Immortal. And I was staying up till 2 in the morning every day just finishing up business stuff. And I thought, when am I going to write this book? So I thought, well, the only time I'd have to write it is after 2 in the morning. So I'd stay up between 2 and 5 was when I wrote The Immortal. And almost everything else I wrote for about 10 years was very late. And I kind of learned to eventually balance it off. So I was able to make a living and do the spiritual work. Finding time for the spiritual work was very difficult because our business required about 80 hours a week of my effort just to whole body and soul together. Because we really ran into a lot of debt at first that we had to compensate for.